Aggressive, dominant, excellent, adult onset, prenatal, infertility, pediatrics, cancer, cardiac, neuro. Welcome to Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. Hello! Welcome to the flagship episode of Gene Therapy. My name is Nick Charles, and I am a board-certified genetic counselor. Now, something that you will learn about me is that I love to talk, and I'm a bit of a ham. And also, as a genetic counselor, most people have no idea what I do when I tell them what I do. And once they know what I do, they have lots of questions. And I love answering questions about genetics. And ultimately, that's what drew me to making this podcast. I am a lover of podcasts. I actually have a few other podcasts myself. But I really wanted to do one about my profession because whenever I meet new people, I end up having like a 20 to 30 minute conversation about family planning or an aunt with cancer or things like that. So here we are. And since this is the first episode, I figured we would start at the very beginning, as Maria von Trapp would say. And that is with answering the question, what exactly is a genetic counselor? So let's picture it. We're at a cocktail party. We are strangers passing. And the inevitable small talk comes up, which, by the way, I hate small talk, but that's another subject. So we have drinks, blah, 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 blah. This is my husband, Arthur. Oh, it's so nice to meet you. Arthur, what do you do? Oh, I'm a social worker. Oh, cool. Nick, what do you do? I'm a genetic counselor. Okay, so boom. One of two things happens. Somebody actually knows what a genetic counselor is, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. What do you do? Or the far more common reaction is, oh, cool. And then either the conversation ends or they think they're really funny and they'll say something like, so you counsel people's genes? Or they'll be like, so like, do you make designer babies? You know, is it like Gattaca? And while I am a Uma Thurman fan, friends, I hate to let you in on a secret. Gattaca is a sci-fi movie. And while there may be some, I don't know, ideas in there that might eventually come to fruition, like, we're not stealing people's DNA. We're not, you know, regardless, it's not real life. And no, I'm not counseling people's genes. And yes, there are plenty of like cartoons out there of like a DNA strand sitting on a therapist's couch. You can Google that for yourself. But regardless, then I have to launch, if they're interested, into what I'm going to tell you guys now, which is what is a genetic counselor. And, you know, I think I have my own specific answer that's unique to me. I think any genetic counselor would have their own unique answer, depending upon who they're with, what they do, where they are. But I figured, since this is a podcast of the utmost journalistic integrity, I would go straight to the source. So I have gone to the National Society of Genetic Counselors website, or nsgc.org, and I pulled up the About Genetic Counselors page, where they do have a full explanation of who genetic counselors are. So everybody strap in, because I'm going to read the full web page. And thank you, NSGC, for putting this page together. None of this is my own. Okay. So genetic counselors are professionals who have specialized education in genetics and counseling to provide personalized help patients may need as they make decisions about their genetic health. Today, there are close to 5,000 certified genetic counselors. And that is true. Genetic counselors have advanced training in medical genetics and counseling to help interpret genetic test results and to guide and support patients seeking more information about such things as how inherited diseases and conditions might affect them or their families, how family and medical histories may impact the chance of disease occurrence or recurrence, which genetic tests may or may not be right for them, and what those tests may or may not tell, and how to make the most informed choices about healthcare conditions. Moving along, most genetic counselors work in a clinic or hospital and often work with obstetricians, oncologists, and other doctors. Like doctors, genetic counselors can work in a variety of settings and provide different services. They may provide general care or specialize in one or more areas, including prenatal and conception for women who are pregnant or thinking about becoming pregnant, pediatric for children and their family members, cancer for patients with cancer and their family members, cardiovascular for patients with diseases of the heart or circulatory system and their family members, neurology for patients with diseases of the brain and nervous system and their family members, and more. Finally, some genetic counselors focus on research, including collecting information such as detailed family histories and pregnancy information that help researchers and advances care for people with genetic conditions. Now, that is the Who Are Genetic Counselors page on the NSGC.org website. And that's certainly a very well put together broad overview of genetic counseling as a profession as a whole. But I do think that my answer that I give to people is a little bit different. And I think it's definitely shaped by my career experiences so far. But essentially, what I would say is genetic counselors help families who in one way or another have found that there is a risk for a genetic condition to either be passed down to children, to be affecting other living family members. And that may be something like cystic fibrosis. It may be something like a predisposition to certain types of cancer. But regardless, ultimately what genetic counselors are doing are risk assessment. And that may be for family planning, that may be for cancer, it may be for an adult onset condition like Huntington's disease. But regardless, we are taking a family history, we're taking the information that we have, and we're talking about what are the likelihoods of X, Y, or Z affecting our patient's health, affecting our patient's living family members, or affecting a patient's offspring in the future. Beyond that, we're also certainly patient advocates, especially for genetic counselors who work directly with patients in a clinical setting. They may have to be talking with laboratories that testing is being ordered through, or insurance companies to prove that testing is necessary. And we are really the frontline partner for a patient in understanding and unveiling what genetic things might be going on in their family, and then helping them through the reactionary phase of that, discovering results of testing, and then helping them take that testing information and digest it and use it to make the most appropriate medical decisions for them. And no, you know, we're not making designer babies. We can't make your baby's eyes blue. We can't make your baby good at sports, things like that. But we can certainly, depending upon where a genetic counselor is practicing, be able to tell you, you know, what is going on in your family? What are the likelihoods of X, Y, or Z? And ultimately, help you understand your genetics better and help you use that information for whatever you see fit. So that is my answer. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I think every genetic counselor's answer would be different and would likely be colored by their career experiences. So since I am your, you know, friendly neighborhood genetic counselor, your trusted, hopefully trusted host with the most, if you will, I figured I'd also tell you a little bit about my career and what I do. And then we'll go from there. But before we jump into that, let's take a short break to hear a word from our sponsor. Okay, we are back. So, Nick Charles, who am I? Why should you trust me in hosting this podcast? So, I have been a genetic counselor since 2013. So, that is 7 years. And goodness gracious, it does not seem that long, but it also means that I am getting old. And I know I have plenty of coworkers who would be like, you're not old, Nick, you're only 31. And I know that, but it doesn't seem like I've been doing this for 7 years, but it's certainly been a interesting roller coaster of a career so far. So how did this all begin? Well, back in high school, which I graduated in 2010 from high school, I'm pretty sure. No. I graduated from college in 2010. I graduated from high school in 2006. Oh my goodness. anyway, so in high school, I was very much a, creative and science person. I loved English. I loved theater. I loved music. And I also loved the life sciences. I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to be a doctor, but I definitely knew I didn't want to go into physics or chemistry or something like that, even though I had a really great AP chemistry teacher. And I hope she is still doing well. She was a fashionista and it was wonderful. Anywho, so I went into college knowing I wanted to major in biology. I decided to go to the University of Scranton in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I accepted my college career there. What do they call it? Early acceptance. And goodness, I love the University of Scranton, but it is a completely different place now. You know, there's a whole new student center and all of the dorms are new and like fresh and clean and things like that. And there's also a completely new science center there. And while I'm a little bit jealous of probably the really beautiful lab rooms and things like that that they have, I will say that working with, you know, more old-fashioned lab equipment and in those really like musty, dusty kind of old lab rooms with the hoods all along the walls and those big flat black like slab tables in the middle with those little stools. It was definitely very formative in my development as a scientist. I loved every second of it. But anyway, I went to University of Scranton, biology pre-med with a minor in musical theater. Or just theater, but you know, I ended up doing mostly musical theater. And hashtag I'm a homosexual. Regardless, I still love theater. I still love singing. It's really one of my favorite hobbies and pastimes. But I was really into genetics in high school. And the thing about being a biology pre-med student at the University of Scranton was that I didn't actually get to a genetics course until my sophomore year, really. Because the first year there, you know, there are a huge number of students that have come in as pre-med biology students. And for lack of a better term, your first year biology and chemistry courses are really structured to cut out the extra fat, if you will. And I'm not going to lie, it was a little bit uncomfortable to see classmates who you're starting to form friendships with drop like flies and go into different majors as they realize, oh, this is not for me. But, you know, me and my core group of friends, shout out to them. You know who you are. We stuck it through. We helped each other a lot with studying and our lab work and things like that. And we woke up as sophomores dazed and feeling hazed. And finally being able to start looking into courses that we were actually interested in. And I did a genetics course. The lab had to do, in the classic sense, with building a fruit fly colony and, you know, looking at them under the microscope, looking for the different types of traits that we could see, the different color eyes, the, you know, the wings that were normal or shriveled and things like that. And a whole bunch of Punnett squares and little a, big B, little B, all the things, peas, pea pods, flowers, different colors and all the things. And I came out of that course knowing that out of all of the life sciences, I really meshed with genetics. It struck a chord for me. It rang the bell, et cetera, et cetera. And I really knew that that's what I wanted to do. But of course, I had to do all my other courses. So I had to go through physics and biochem, which I'm pretty sure biochem in the middle of the first semester of that was the first time that I experienced a legitimate anxiety attack. I hated biochem so much. And then in other biology courses, we were starting to do dissections with frogs and squids and fetal pigs. And then there was a cat. And, you know, the animal started to get bigger and more human-like. And I hated it so freaking much. I did not enjoy cutting into other, you know, species at all. And the only thing that I really thought was kind of cool was this one lab that we did for a course that I could not remember the name of now. But essentially, we had cut open a frog's chest cavity and we were monitoring its heartbeat with some type of software on early Apple computers, like the ones that were all like plasticky and white with the different like neon colors. And I remember it was one of the blue ones and it was a whole thing. And it was very interesting, but I still felt really bad being like, oh, let's put your heart on a hook, Mr. Frog. And in the midst of finding my friend group, finding my footing in my hobbies, realizing that I really liked musical theater and, you know, going out for the plays and things like that, I was lucky enough that a lot of my choir friends and my musical theater friends were also my biology major colleagues as well. And, you know, I have one friend, Laura, who knew coming into college she wanted to be a veterinarian, and that's what she's doing now. Holler to you, Laura. I haven't talked to you in a while. I hope you're doing well if you're listening, which you're probably not, but whatever. And then I had a lot of friends who ultimately did go to med school and are now doctors in one, you know, specialty or another. But after those labs and talking to them and talking about what we did and didn't like, I knew that going into actual medical doctor territory was not going to be for me. I would not be able to handle cutting another human being open for any reason whatsoever. You know, I'm fine with blood. Like, if I had to learn how to do phlebotomy, I definitely could. But I think the pressure of potentially having to do an operation or having to very much on the fly diagnose something and save a person's life potentially with X, Y, or Z drug really wasn't for me, but mainly it was the cutting into people that I didn't like. So I had a really, really fantastic academic advisor. His name was George Gomez. He was a really great professor. I know he has left the University of Scranton since I graduated, but I hope he's doing well. And we had a really great conversation one day in his office, surrounded by his animals that were involved in his research, that, you know, I didn't have to be a doctor. You know, he himself was not a doctor. He certainly understood where I was coming from. And we got talking and we realized, you know, I was actually surrounded at home by people who ultimately did probably start out on the same path that I did and then specialized in something else. You know, my mom is a speech pathologist, and I have some friends at home that went into podiatry, dentistry. I have some friends that are now occupational therapists or physical therapists. My husband's sister is a physical therapist now. And always love having medical conversations with her. But, you know, ultimately, I kind of had these blinders on that, like, I had to be a doctor because I was pre-med biology. And Dr. George Gomez really helped me realize that wasn't the case. And, you know, I was talking with my mom about this, and I knew I didn't want to be a speech pathologist because why would I do that? I wanted to go into genetics. But I also knew that as much as I might enjoy lab work and I was enjoying it in my studies, I didn't think that specifically would be for me long term as a career. And ultimately, that was because as much as I am an introvert in my personal life, I really like talking to people and educating people and helping people. And that makes me feel like I'm putting some type of positive energy out into the world and making a difference with my career choice. So luckily enough, one of my mother's speech pathology friends, who worked in a different school than her, had a daughter who had just recently graduated from one of the genetic counseling programs on the East Coast. And at the time, you know, this was probably 2007, 2008, where there still were not as many genetic counseling programs as there are now. So it was probably like Arcadia or Sarah Lawrence College. I'm not exactly sure. But my mom said, you know, this is something genetics and it's not being a doctor. You should look into it. And so I did. I remember going to the library. I remember sitting down at a computer, probably with an egg sandwich from the cafeteria and a chocolate milk because your boy loves chocolate milk. And I Googled genetic counseling, and I could not tell you what information I found at the time, but it was still a rather, you know, new kid on the block, pretty unknown career. But I found information and I read up on it and, you know, I said, oh, this is something that I think would be for me. So I finished up school and, you know, everybody is applying to grad programs, medical school programs, and I did apply to a couple of genetic counseling master's degree programs. I remember applying to Arcadia and Boston College and Sarah Lawrence College. and somewhere else that I can't remember, but it was four programs. I didn't get in anywhere, bottom line. Ultimately, I did not have any observational experience at that point. And that's really because while there were a couple hospitals around the University of Scranton campus, they were mainly local hospitals, mainly for emergency care. None of them had like large programs for OBGYN or, you know, cancer or things like that. So there were no genetic counselors around in Northeast Pennsylvania where I was. And at the time, that's kind of the way it was. You know, genetic counselors were there, but they were few and far between and, you know, kind of flying under the radar, if you will, and all mainly working in clinical care. I got my letter of decline from Sarah Lawrence College, but they were very generous in saying, you know, if you do want to talk about how you can improve your chances of being accepted to our program or any other program in the future, we would certainly be willing to schedule some time to sit down and talk to you about it. So I took advantage of that, and I ended up having a meeting with Jamie Spear, who at the time was the assistant director of the Sarah Lawrence College graduate program in human genetics. And number one, he was one of the first male genetic counselors I ever met. And number two, he was so very gracious with his time and his advice. And we looked at my resume, we looked at my grades, and he said, ultimately, the big thing was you've never actually seen a genetic counselor in action. You really need to sit down with a genetic counselor and see what they do to make sure this is for you. And I said, okay, I guess I'm taking a year off unexpectedly. And that's what I did. And I started searching around for genetic counselors in my area that I could observe with. And I, born and raised in Northeast New Jersey, found the New Jersey Perinatal Associates at St. Barnabas, and I reached out, and the director of the genetic counseling department there, Laura Lamone, was gracious enough to let me come in and observe with her and her colleagues, and I sat there. And I thought to myself, you know, this is prenatal. It's talking about babies, talking about prenatal screening, maybe some infertility, maybe some pre-pregnancy planning for couples who are not pregnant but want to be pregnant. And I thought, perhaps this is not for me. For some reason, I thought I wanted to be in cancer. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I didn't think that it would be appropriate for a man to be discussing prenatal care with a woman when I would never be pregnant myself. But I guess we'll get to there when we get there, about how that changed. But regardless, I knew that I loved what I was seeing, and I saw this group of women, really doing this very elaborate, but, graceful play with every patient that came in, where they had their set things they wanted to talk about, but depending upon the questions a patient had, they were able to, on the fly, you know, change the course of the discussion, give the patient the information they wanted or needed, and really, at the end of an hour session, have this patient feel empowered and have a direction as to where their care was going to and what would be happening. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. If I could empower patients like this, this would be exactly what I want to do. So I observed more with other counselors as well. I also volunteered at a crisis hotline for that year and got some experience with crisis counseling. And I knew going into applying to graduate school that that next coming round of cycle, whatever you want to call it. I really felt like after talking with Jamie Spear at Sarah Lawrence College, that's where I belonged. They were a very person forward program, knowing and realizing that everybody is different. And yes, we all have to get the same training, but everybody's going to end up doing what they want to do. And that would be unique for everybody. And they really fostered that. So I applied to only the Sarah Lawrence program and I got in. So in 2013, I started at Sarah Lawrence College as a first year grad student. And I made some fantastic friends there, some lifelong friends that, you know, will be around forever. I just went to one of my fellow students' weddings a couple weeks ago. And it was a great time and saw some people that I hadn't seen in a while. But, you know, we're all doing our things, either pursuing more education or settling into our careers 7 years in. And that's really freaking cool. So, anyway, that's like all the background, I guess. But in terms of my actual career, I, as a student, did my full summer rotation at what at the time was UMDNJ in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And there, under the supervision of some really amazing genetic counselors, I basically honed my skills as a prenatal, high-risk prenatal, and infertility genetic counselor. And I found that in being pushed to, you know, gain my skills, foster my skills, grow my skills as a prenatal counselor, that I actually only had eyes for prenatal counseling. I really actually ended up not liking cancer counseling when I actually ended up having my cancer rotation. I didn't really see the hope in that type of counseling. I only saw the darkness in it. And in prenatal counseling, I saw how even in tragedy, if a baby was lost or, you know, there was going to be a termination or something like that, there was still hope for a healthy pregnancy next time. There were steps we could take to, you know, make that a possibility as much as possible. Or, you know, sometimes there are false scares and you could walk a patient through that and get them out on the other side of that tunnel. And, you know, some people find prenatal counseling incredibly depressing and they love cancer. So it's just to each their own. But I was not expecting to have such a passion for prenatal and fertility counseling. But I did. And I really flew there. I was like living my best genetic counseling life. And I went into my second year of school after that rotation, like having a lot of cases for my logbook and really feeling like I was kind of already a counselor in my own right. And that was amazing. So I do have to thank all of the genetic counselors that I worked with at UMDNJ for helping me become awesome, if you will. And second year continues on. I was still keeping in touch with UMDNJ and the counselors there. And it just so ended up that they actually had an opening for a counselor in May, which, oh, that's convenient because that's when graduation was. So I applied for the job. And I actually got it. So I was going into my last semester of genetic counseling school with a job already lined up. And I was so excited. I was going to be working with my supervisors now as colleagues. And I felt like, you know, I must have like already got all my things in the basket, all my ducks were in a row, whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use. But boy, was I wrong, because there is still a difference between counseling patients as a student and then suddenly being responsible for everything as the employed genetic counselor. But I worked at UMDNJ for just about 2 years. In that time, it became Rutgers. And I was unfortunately let go because there were budget cuts. So I started scrambling for a job in 2016. And I reached out to all of my supervisors, anybody I could think of, all of my classmates at Sarah Lawrence College. And the thing to remember about the genetic counseling community is it is small. As I mentioned, there's only about 5,000 of us, and that is less than a drop in the bucket of the world in the grand scheme of things. So don't burn your bridges, boo. That is really one of the biggest lessons to learn as a genetic counseling student. And lucky enough for me, a couple of my classmates said, oh, we're hiring here where I am. Oh, we're hiring here where I am. And then there was also some supervisors that said, oh, we have an open position, blah, 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 blah. And I applied for two or three jobs. And one of my really good friends from grad school, her name is Shabby. Hey, Shabby, if you're listening, hey, girl. We found love in a hopeless place. That's our song, Holler. She was working at a company called Recombine at the time, which was a carrier screening company. And this was right around the time where carrier screening, especially expanded carrier screening, was exploding. And I will pause here and say, I know I'm touching on a lot of like things within my story that are topics in themselves. And I plan to have separate episodes on all of these things in themselves. So don't you worry. But anyway, started talking with her manager, Sally, and I realized, you know, maybe I was really interested in working in an industry space, working for a company that actually produced and gave the genetic counseling and genetic testing products to clinics. So I found myself 2 years into a clinical career, transitioning into an industry space where I wasn't doing, in-person face-to-face genetic counseling. And oh, by the way, I was offered the job at Recombine and I took it. And this was also around the time I started dating my now husband, Arthur. He lived on Staten Island at the time. We still do live on Staten Island, but together now because we're like married and stuff. But Recombine was located in Manhattan. So I was this New Jerseyan now having to, go into the city, New York, Manhattan, on a daily basis for work. And I really loved it. And Recombine was at the time one of those very small startup companies where basically if you had an idea and you could prove you had a plan to make it happen, you were able to go for it. So coming from a clinical space, it was amazing that I had the opportunities and, you know, the rope, if you will, to develop all of these new procedures and guidelines for our counseling to better match clinical care and to more seamlessly be able to go from a third-party genetic counselor counseling someone on the phone about their carrier screening results to the in-person doctor or genetic counselor who's actually going to be directly taking care of this patient. And in my time at Recombine, non-invasive prenatal screening or non-invasive prenatal testing, NIPT, became a thing, and I ended up becoming the product manager of Recombine's NIPT product for a while. And I worked at Recombine for, I mean, I guess 2 or 3 years until our company was acquired by a larger company, Cooper Surgical. And Cooper Surgical is a company that creates female health products, and also wanted to get into the fertility space. Also, women forward, you know, family planning, etc. So Cooper Surgical acquired a whole bunch of companies that worked in the fertility space and the artificial reproductive technology space, or ART, or in vitro fertilization side of things, or IVF. And they had all these products to offer places, but then they also had these new genetic tests to offer places. They acquired Recombine, they acquired a couple other companies, and they became this kind of very large, solid, all one-stop shop for IVF clinics to provide their couples with not only fertility services, but if they wanted it, screening of their embryos for chromosome abnormalities and things like that. And obviously, in terms of what my current employer does, we can get into that on its own episode. Certainly, we won't talk in specifics about Cooper Surgical or things like that, but just the products that we provide and other companies provide. There's so many possibilities for so many episodes. I'm super excited. And I hope that you guys are interested and willing to hear. But anyway, fast forward into the future. Now it's 2020. Here I am at Cooper Surgical, Cooper Genomics. And honestly, I don't really speak to patients that much anymore. I have a role that is more laboratory facing than patient facing. I essentially do the quality control for all of our embryo screening reporting that comes out of the lab, and making sure that when a report goes out to a clinic and ultimately a patient, that any information on there is patient friendly, that any special information we have to add because there's a specific result is also fully explained and patient friendly. And I also do some quality control work in terms of tracking metrics and things like that. So I'm certainly in a role that, you know, Nick 10 years ago probably wouldn't have pictured himself in. But I certainly still flex all of my genetic counseling muscles in this job that I do now. But I really like where I am right now in my career because I have the opportunity to not only for my employer, but other companies who employ genetic counselors, look at things from a big perspective and hopefully, you know, potentially not only change the way that certain things are run at my company, but other companies as well with, you know, looking at numbers, looking at figures from a genetic counseling perspective, being more of a clinical specialist than any scientist working in the lab saying, hey, X, Y, or Z is not going to go over well with a doctor or a patient, and this is how we should do it, not this way that we're currently doing it. Again, something that if you guys are interested in, we could go into more about exactly what I do, but you know, not in too much detail because it's still a secret. It's not really a secret, but you know, I don't want to blow anybody's whistles or anything like that. But anyway, so that is the story of my career thus far as a genetic counselor and how I got here. And ultimately, I always picture myself working in a prenatal and infertility space. I really love talking about babies and helping couples have the babies they want and talking about family planning and all of that jazz. Ironically, my husband and I are talking about children and we do want to be fathers, but I'm just not there yet. Like, I love a baby. Babies are cute and adorable. I just don't want to be responsible for one yet. What I do want is a dog. So we'll see what happens with that. As of right now, that is where I'm at in my career as a genetic counselor. And I'm very excited to get this going. I thought that this would be the most appropriate way to, you know, hit things off. And hopefully you found this interesting. And hopefully you'll come back for more. But essentially, my name is Nick Charles, and I'm a board-certified genetic counselor. And we're going to discuss and educate you on all of the things you're wondering about. We'll certainly have episodes about the different specialties that people can go into. I really want to have like little mini episodes about specific common genetic disorders that carrier screening looks at, and talking about those in depth. I want to have episodes about specific testing types, direct-to-consumer testing, NIPT, carrier screening, amniocentesis, and CVS, and all that jazz. I would really love to have some of my colleagues on to talk about genetic counseling from their perspectives and talk about their careers and how they got to where they are now. Also have genetic counselors on to talk about their opinions on specific topics, like a round table and things like that. But honestly, you know, I could create all types of content for this podcast, but I do want to make sure that I'm hitting on all the things that, you know, you, the listeners, want to hear about. So if you're excited and intrigued by gene therapy and you want to hear more, let me know what you want to talk about and, you know, hear about specifically. And I'll make sure to start there. So if you do want to ask me questions and request specific topics, you can reach me in one of three different ways. You can leave me a voice message. The link to do that is in the episode description. You can message me on Instagram. The Instagram for the podcast is Gene Therapy Pod, P-O-D. That's at Gene Therapy Pod. Slide into my DMs. Let me know your thoughts and your questions. Or you can email me at genetherapypodcast@gmail.com. That's genetherapypodcast@gmail.com. So I think that is enough for right now. I hope you enjoyed learning about my life as a genetic counselor and how I got here into 2020. Right now, we are in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. So I hope everybody is staying safe and healthy and hydrated. And guys, don't go out unless you have to. Like, really do listen to those guidelines because they're there for a reason. And hopefully sooner than later, we'll be able to all start our lives like normal again. But until then, definitely reach out and let me know if you have any specific questions or ideas for a new episode. Otherwise, I'm still not sure if this is going to be a bi-weekly or a weekly podcast. But I guess we will see what happens, and I will talk to you guys next time. And until then, bye. This has been Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. Please note that while I am a medical professional, any information discussed in this podcast does not constitute actionable medical advice. If you feel genetic counseling is appropriate for you, visit nsgc.org to find a genetic counselor practicing in your area. And don't forget to comment, rate, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Bye for now.